Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Brenton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good afternoon, Mr. Joe.
Good hello. Good hello, Matt. How are you? How are you? You ready for a podcast?
I'm always ready for a podcast with you, Joe. Rocking twosome of Matt and Joe about to dive in. Some right old nerdage.
We are going to dive into some extreme nerdery. I think we said last week on the podcast, I can't remember if we said on the podcast or the Patreon, but we said we were going to talk a little bit about cool old vintage electroharmonics pedals, because I'm on a bit of a pedal kick.
Yeah,
at the moment. So we're going to talk about those at some point. There have been some weird Fenders that have come out. I've had an amp that's come out. Well, no, you know, I've helped Ashdown make an amp that got released, and we're going to talk about the acoustics that you, dear listener, were helping me narrow down. I had some great messages from people helping me out with suggestions for acoustics. I had some rubbish suggestions from people as well, but that's okay. I forgive you.
all be winners.
No, exactly. Exactly. But first of all, I want to talk about the wonderful and super duper globally famous Denmark Street, the absolute home and hub of cool guitar shops of the past. Because, of course, it was inside of a year ago that there was a particular shop on Denmark Street that Ashdown were leasing, and we did like that little evening event with Guy Pratt and stuff, and you came down, all the nerds came down, we had a beer and checked some stuff out. But now that shop's changed completely, Matt.
Indeed, because I am pleased to announce, not that it's much of a secret anymore, But Roland have opened our first kind of retail store, I guess. The kind of Roland experience, as we say, the best place to experience Roland and Boss products in the heart of London.
It's a great idea, because you've got the catalogue for it, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, what, guitar, bass, drums, you know.
Yeah, few other
everything.
Few other brands have enough to fill a shop. Completely with something of nearly everything. So,
yeah. So, I mean, this is, it's kind of been soft launched at the moment. There's not been a kind of official press release or anything yet, but obviously you can literally walk on the store and walk down the street and see it. I actually worked there on Saturday, kind of put my retail boots back on after nearly 6 years away
from
working in the store, and it was great fun. I was like, maybe I should work in a shop again.
Shall we go back to GAC, Matt?
Shall we go back? Open our own store. It was really good. And I think, for anyone listening, if you're in London, obviously probably, as you say, people would know Denmark Street, a huge amount of history, almost 100 years of history. Started off as the street where all the music publishers were, that went into sheet music. Guitar stores in the 60s, obviously Orange had their first store there. Macari's, which obviously unfortunately recently departed from there. Many stores have been on that street for a very, very long time. I think Rose Morris have been on there since the 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
You know, so much has happened on that street. But people will probably know that the street itself has been in somewhat of a decline over the last kind of decade. But it turns out that there's been one person sort of like buying up the property, I guess, and then turning that into what the street is now becoming. So Tottenham Court Road Station has gone under a massive redevelopment because of Crossrail. So now you can get across London super quick on the new Elizabeth line. And so Tottenham Court Road has been part of that. And a company called Alternet is basically redeveloping the entire of Denmark Street. So as you come out, there's a whole new street. The back of it has all been knocked down and rebuilt. It houses like Europe's largest set of media screens.
Yes, they do. There's like open media stuff that you can just walk into on Denmark Street itself, and on it as part of that Alternet.com building that's right next to the station.
Yeah, it's they were testing one that was like floor to ceiling like screens, and then you can basically walk straight through from Tottenham Court Road Station basically onto Denmark Street now, which you couldn't do before. You had to walk around, and there's a huge tunnel that's all screens, and they were playing like some Eno-esque ambient music, and then like the colors would change, like it was like falling leaves, and then the leaf. Anyway, that's super cool. And then you see that, and our shop is directly opposite, which is also very cool because you can make it light up in different colors. It's got a whole you'll like this, Joe. It's got a whole like DMX MIDI lighting rig there. So if you're like trying some boss stuff, I can hit the little boss button, the whole shop turns blue for you. Or you know, if you're looping, I can make it red and green. But no, seriously, a great place to come and try basically everything in one space.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You know, what have you got there? Have you got every pedal? Like, is it now?
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, that's very good. That's very good. If you're thinking about buying any Boss pedal, you know there's now a place where it's guaranteed that you can go and check it out.
Yeah, it really is like an experience base. That's what we're sort of driving. So, like, there's five drum kits of all the range. There's everything from our most expensive grand piano to our basic home pianos, all of our dance and DJ equipment, you know, our wind instruments that we do, electronic wind instruments, all of our synths. There's a coffee bar there. If you go in really nicely and talk to the team there, I'm sure they'll make you a coffee. It's just a really cool, small, but just a really cool little retail space. And in the Boss area, all the Katanas, all the bass amps, all the pedals are hooked up to IR200, so you can hear them in headphones, or you can go straight to the back of an amp. We've got a little tablet set up, so you can actually have some DI audio running through the pedals into an amp. So if you don't want to play, basically someone can play for you, and you can just turn on a distortion pedal and tweak it in real time, which is very cool. So you can actually demo what loads of pedals sound like together. It's a great way to kind of go, don't just need a distortion, I also need a delay and a phaser and stuff like that. But it's really good fun. It's really good fun. So if you're in London, please go and check it out and give us your feedback. And be a nice little space moving forward, I think.
That's very cool indeed. Do you have the jazz choruses there? Is it just there Katanas?
No, there is a JC40 there, I think. I think we're trying to get basically as much as one of everything. So there's obviously, you know, from a Roland and from a Boss perspective, you can basically go in and try pretty much everything. So there's still a few things that need to be put out. We've only been open a week. We opened sort of soft opened last Saturday, and it's open Tuesday to Saturday at the moment, no Sundays and Mondays, 10 till 6. And if there's something there that's missing, obviously we can always try and get it in for you to demo as well. But yeah, very, very cool indeed.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 one and complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
That is exciting. I was, you know, from last week, I was talking about the pedal board that I ended up with, where I ended up, you know, essentially adding a whole bunch of Boss pedals onto my board. And I was kind of looking at, I had a space. I was like, what to get? I want something called vintage because I loved the OC2 so much. And I was looking at the Touchwah, the old Touchwah. But that kind of led me on to like trying to look up blogs and things for discontinued, maybe sleeper Boss pedals, you know, to see what was out and about. And there are some interesting pedals that I definitely haven't come across before, which I'm sure, Matt, you have spoken about in the past on this podcast, and maybe I've just forgotten. Of course, one of the ones that comes up in a lot of the blog articles I was finding, whether, you know, all like the top 10 coolest discontinued Boss pedals, those sorts of things, was the FBM1, the Fender 59 Bassman. Of course, I remember that quite well from our GAC days, because there were two Fender Boss collaborations, right?
There was three, actually. The FBM1, which was the Bassman.
Is just a preamp.
We had the FDR1, which was the 65 Deluxe Reverb. And then we had the FRV1, which is the 63 reverb tank.
I see.
So the reverb tank, the FRV1, is the kind of crazy high-valued Boss pedals at the moment, like secondhand.
Really? Because, right.
Well, again, I think, you know, they're great pedals. I think the FRV1, the reverb, was probably a bit of a sleeper hit.
It was definitely on a lot of boards, I think, you know, shortly after it was discontinued.
Yeah, I think it just, it's one of those things that I think, probably was made, I don't know the full history, but I think it was made, obviously, like, in contract with Fender, so it was only made for, like, a certain amount of time, and then after that, obviously, discontinued. And then, the reverb, because it's got that kind of real splashy spring thing, and it does it so well. It just became hard to get hold of. And they go for like crazy money. And I think it was last year or the year before, there was like a retailer in Germany that like found an entire box of them like in their warehouse. And they were like, we've just found a whole box of FRV1s. And they're all going online right now. And I think they listed them at like $299. And they were like sold out like instantly. I think there's one on good old Reverb right now for £230.
Ouch. It's not bad on pedal money, but for Boss pedal money, that's pretty premium.
Well, interestingly, there's a lot of Boss pedals now reaching, you know, I would say that 8-9 years ago, most Boss pedals were secondhand or dead cheap, apart from things like the SP1, the SG1, you know, the kind of first ones.
But a lot of them would really be on the £100 mark or under.
Absolutely. And I think that has massively shifted now. And I think that's just due to the kind of the rise in the brand. And, you know, I think one thing, and I don't mind you know, saying this on the podcast, but we all met Yoshi. I think, I can't remember if you were there as well, Joe. I definitely remember Jay and Mark being there, and we met Yoshi before he...
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Before, just as he became boss president, I think it was about 7 years ago, and a couple of years before I started at Roland. And I was like, I'm the boss, the biggest boss fanboy, but the brand is seen as to be so uncool by so many people. And, you know, Yoshi, and we've talked about it.
It used to be. You mean it used to be? Yeah.
You know, that's how it, I think it was, you know, eight years ago. I mean, Yoshi talked about it on the Talk with Boss. And, you know, he went away and kind of did the Waza thing and a bunch of other things and kind of, you know, we spent a long time just sort of building the brand. And
do you think the Waza changed things, or do you think it happened before then?
I think that was certainly a catalyst. Because I think the Waza pedals, you know, interestingly, I think, you know, I would say personally that things were probably being a bit too safe. And I think, you know, we needed to do something.
Not a brand that had ever looked at their heritage, especially.
Well, I think the thing is,
and
well,
this allowed them to.
I think the thing is that, yeah, the ethos is never, like, it's not to, it's to take inspiration from the past and your heritage and make something new, not reissue something that's already been done, because that's been done. And, you know, that's why the Waza pedals aren't, you know, they're not a reissue. They're not a straight-out copy. But yeah, no, I think interestingly, you know, Boss really has seen a revival in the new and in the used market. And a lot of pedals that were, I mean, you know, it's interesting, really. You know, you look at, you know, things like PS2 or PS3, you know, and obviously they get picked up in a scene like, you know, in the kind of math scene and your thing, and they just go for crazy money. FZ2. You know, way before we did the FZ1, you know, everyone's like, oh my God, FZ2 is the first pedal to get, you know, and that changed in the space of like a year. I mean, I bought mine in Japan for the equivalent of £40. And I think now they're like 250 quid. You know, you can't buy them for, you know, for a while, you couldn't buy them for like love nor money.
The Boss PS2, I think, was one that had a big old impact in the math scene. And kind of now, I think they go for around, I'm just looking now, they go for around £120-130.
Yeah. I think the thing is there's not many Boss pedals. Just the thing to remember, there's not many Boss pedals where we didn't make, like, the tiniest we've ever made is the TB2. And that was, you know, whatever, you know, 3,000 units.
Yeah, it almost doesn't count, though, the TB2.
No, but most pedals, I think the shortest production run was, the Extortion, the XT2.
Oh, my goodness, that's the one I'm looking at right now that I was going to talk about next.
The Boss XT2 Extortion.
I know nothing about this pedal. I mean, it's got a contour and a punch control, so I don't know, is it kind of rat-esque?
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the, I think, was it the XT2? I'm sure someone's going to correct me. There was the XT2, and then, no, I'm thinking of XT2 we made for a bit longer. It was the, P Power Driver, the PW.
Oh, yes. I remember the Power Driver. That was your version of a Marshall Stack, the Power Driver. It was supposed to be that sort of thing, because I remember you did the commercial with the Gallows guitarist.
No, you're thinking of the ST2. Which was the power stack. This is the
power stack, yes.
This is the power driver. And interestingly, one on Reverb, nearly 300 quid. We only made that for 9 months, and we only made it for 9 months because it was like a massive failure. Not to say it's a bad pedal at all, but, you know, we only made that for 9 months, and the controls on that were, I think, kind of quite, if I remember rightly, I'm just going to have to bring up picture of it. Yeah, level, fat, muscle and drive. And I think that was supposed to be more of the kind of rat style thing. And then we also had the XT2. Yeah, level, contour, punch and distortion. Again,
and it's in like a really bold sort of Dakota red, dear listener, with a black back panel.
Yeah, I think that, I can't even remember this, 1990s, I mean, again, quite short, 1996 to 1998.
Yeah, I mean, it's Extortion, but it's spelt with an X, so that's 90s for sure.
Yeah, I think...
the 90s, the time for misspelling things.
Yeah, so again, you know, very much, you know, mean, and if you're interested, me and Yoshi have done quite a lot of live streams on the Boss channel, where we've talked about, you know, Boss and these sort of things. And
it's on the YouTube, right? On the Boss.
It's
YouTube.
On the Boss channel on YouTube. Yeah, talked a lot about, you know, a lot of pedals being made very much for the time and the scene of music at that time.
Of course,
you know?
Of course.
And then obviously, you know, some things just take off and become legacy, and some things don't, but find their, interesting with Boss, I think, are finding their second wind now, you know. And I think, right. I think that's because it really fits into the collector's thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a lot, you know, there's some great Proco, yes, or you can go out there and buy lots of different types of the same pedal, Rat, you know, for example.
Yeah.
But with Boss, there's 125 compacts you can go out and find. You know, it's like Generation One Pokemon. There's like 125 originals, plus you've got all of the, you know, potential variations. You know, DM2 had two different chipsets and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, there's some cool stuff. I mean, if I had to pick, I mean, I do love the PS2. I think the PS2 is wicked. And I think,
what was the difference between the PS2 and the PS3? Do you remember?
I got a feeling that they were very similar, and there was only minor changes between the two.
Yeah.
It was one of those ones where it was like, we made the two, and then we, because the DD2 and DD3 are also very, very similar, and they were released not that far apart. So the PS2, I think it probably had, it was 1989.
My goodness, what? 1989? Glitch sounds in 1989. Well, that's,
considering the first digital delay was the DD2 in, I think, like 1987. You know,
well, wait. No, because the DSD2, the digital sampler delay, was 1985.
Or am I thinking 84?
Okay, maybe, four. Yeah.
But yeah, the DD2 was first, and then obviously everything else from that. So I think there was PS3,
I think just more modes on it.
Yeah, I think a few different modes, a few updates, and I think they'd also managed to reduce the size of the, so interestingly, interesting story about the PS2, which you can find in the Boss book, the discontinued Boss Hal Leonard book, was that at the time it had more components in it than any other pedal that we made. And it's actually two circuit boards. And I spoke to the engineer that actually worked on the design. And he was like, yeah, we were sort of like effectively locked in a room to try and get all these components to fit on inside a compact. Goodness. And actually, if you take a PS2 out of the box, there's one component that like hangs off the edge of the circuit board, because it's the only way they could make it fit. But the PS2, yeah, same, and PS3, same as the RPS10.
What was the book that you mentioned?
Hal Leonard did a book called The Boss Book, which is discontinued now. I think they discontinued it in the early 2000s, but definitely worth trying to pick up one if you can. It's a wicked little book. Loads of great stories, loads of great you know, interviews and stuff about the brand and things like that as well. But yeah, I would say, yeah, PS2 I love because it's weird and it's glitchy and it was ahead of its time. RV3 is the kind of real shoegazy, that's the delay reverb.
Oh, yeah.
And that's got all of like,
I didn't know you ever did a delay reverb.
Yeah, so we did a delay reverb RV3. I've got a DSD2, which is cool because, yeah, you can like use it as like a mini, like 200 millisecond sampler. So you can kind of get some like stuttery sort of effects in it. But it's difficult because so many of our compacts have like never been discontinued. So,
right.
I don't know. Can't pick a favorite.
Can't pick a favorite because that's what I want. I basically want to, I want some advice on something I should get and try that's maybe a bit weird and wonderful. Well, you've spoken about the digital metalizer before, the MZ2.
Hidden gem. Again, they're all hidden gems. digital metalizer is analog drive, digital stereo chorus.
Oh my goodness, that sounds so incredibly 90s.
Yeah, again, just very much that sort of, you have to run it in stereo because it's...
And it's a... Oh, you do? Okay, and it's a black pedal with blood-red writing.
Yeah, you don't have to, but...
Right, but you're missing
it. The idea is that you run it in stereo and it just sounds like, yeah, the ultimate in 80s distortion.
I see.
But yeah, that's cool. I mean, it depends what you want, really, Joe. Like, if you want drives, then...
This kind of brings me on to something else, is basically what I ended up doing. Now, I still want to get a Touch Wah, but I actually found that the Boss MS3 has a very good Touch Wah. I'd never used it before. I always used the Auto Wah, which, to be honest, is only okay. But the Touch Wah is actually very good on the MS3. So that thirst is slaked a little bit for me at the moment. And I ended up spending that spare gap on my pedal board on an HM2 Wazzercraft.
Nice.
Pedal. Yes. So I really recently, I don't know, I think it's because it's called the heavy metal. I've always written it off as being, you know, probably not very good. Or not, no, that's wrong. Not the sort of sound I want. That's anything that's using, you know, metal in its name is clearly not going to be for me, because I just think of all the scoopy metal tones. I'm like, well, that's not what I want. And of course, like we mentioned on last week, that I've been working with KMA pedals, and they do a couple of HM2 style pedals as well. So I've been making videos for those, and it's the first time really I've given HM2 style pedals the time of day. And since plugging those in, I was like, wow, it is actually really good, and more interestingly enough, really good on bass. And because I've got the Wazzercraft HM2, the custom setting on it gives it a much broader, even though you've just got those two bands of EQ, the custom setting means that they're so very broad that if you boost all that low end, it kind of replaces the need for having a blend control on the pedal.
Right.
And actually just sounds fantastic. And the sort of the harmonics and the sort of the sustain on the drive from that pedal is absolutely amazing. I know it's got a purpose. I know the Swedish Chainsaw thing. I know Dave Gilmour's doing his sort of thing with it. But as a big bass guitar drive, I absolutely love it. It's fantastic.
Well, I think it's important to remember that actually the amount of gain on tap is way less than anything else that came after it. You know, very, right, very much a kind of more lower gain pedal, where everything was obviously then turned up to max and then run into the front of a kind of solid state Marshall. That's the chainsaw sound, if you were.
Yeah.
If you will. But yeah, actually, the actual drive circuit is not as gainy as the pedal that came after it, which was, you had the Hyper Metal after that, and then obviously the Metal Zone after that. So really, in terms of gain, I think it was Boss's sixth or seventh distortion pedal, and definitely gainier than things that had come before it, but not as gainy as things are now.
No, I'd not want to use the word transparent with it, but it's not as all or nothing as you'd think. When I thought about using it for bass, I thought, well, I'll... You know, it's difficult to know, isn't it? For any dear listener, if you're a bass player, you'll know everything sounds great when you plug it in at home, but you never really know until you're in a band practice and all the sub sort of drops out when you switch on the pedal. That's the point that you know whether or not the pedal works on bass. So I was looking around on blogs and things, and some people, obviously in quite heavy bands, were talking about it as an always-on kind of preamp sort of thing, which obviously is an extreme, but... I found gain at like 9 o'clock, and then, you know, low end at 3 o'clock, treble at 9 o'clock, actually sounded fantastic for, you know, a not too ridiculous over the top, but a proper big sounding bass drive. And I'm really into it. I think I could get into HM2s.
Well, there you go. Sometimes you've just got to try and put your mind aside and your preconceptions aside and just plug it in.
There you go. But what is the fuzz that you love so much? Is it the Hyper fuzz?
Yeah, the FZ2 is just... Yeah, I mean, actually, I've got to say, the FZ1, which is a fuzz we did recently, I've got that on my Boss demo board at the moment on my BCB1000, and that thing absolutely rips. It's amazing. And because it's so dynamic to your volume control, it's not sensitive to input impedance. You don't have to worry about where you put it in the chain or buffers or anything like that. And it's just, you know, it's got all the gain you could want, but you can really dial it back and you can play around with your volume control. The difference with the FZ2, the Hyperfuzz, is that it's very much, originally got its kind of break, I think probably after it was discontinued, when Electric Wizard used it for their album, seminal Doom album, Dope Throne. And it just, you know, just super insanely heavy, like, distortion sound. Discontinued way back in 1977. It's very much like, supposed to be a 60s, 70s kind of fuzz, so very much like a Univox Super Fuzz, I guess, is the closest thing people say cool. to it. So it's got that kind of upper octave thing.
Hmm.
You've got two fuzzes, and then you can disengage the fuzz and just use it as a boost.
Very nice.
The FZ2, awesome, awesome pedal. I would say if you wanted any... It's difficult. If you were going to buy anything from a Boss range, if I had to tell someone to buy one vintage Boss pedal, what would it be?
Hmm.
I mean, FZ2 from a drive perspective, because I think it's so interesting.
Right.
I mean, part of me would say OC2, but I think really I'd just say go and buy an OC5.
I love the OC2. I think the OC5 is great. I just love the cool simplicity of the OC2.
I think there's a few things that now we do in the Waz version and things like that. I'm like, actually, you could just go and get that. I mean, again, I would say, like, I still love my DD3. Do you know, I leave it on like 99% of the time. Wow. You know,
just as a subtle sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. I tell you what, I've got one, and it's just came up, and it's still a current product. It's an absolute hidden gem, and I think people who know me will know.
If you say the Overtone.
No, I'm going to say the TE2 Terra Echo. I think
so same era, though, as the Overtone. Yes. They came out as a pair, didn't they, the Terra Echo and the Overtone?
100th Boss pedal release. TE2 is so difficult to describe what the TE2 is, but effectively it analyzes all of the input, all of the string inputs, all of the frequency range, and applies a bunch of wacky delay effects.
It has almost a sort of wah-esque delay sound.
Yeah, it's like a filtered delay, but it's also envelope controlled. Your picking dynamics play a lot into how it sounds, and you can do like a sound hold freeze type thing. Yeah, so I'd say anyone out there looking for a kind of more unique Boss pedal, looking for something a bit different, then TE2 would be my shout. Not vintage.
The TE2's, very cool, though.
Very cool.
Indeed. It's Tim, the guitarist in my band, it's a real backbone of his pedal board,
right.
Just the MS3 version of it, because the Terra Echo, surprisingly, is on the MS3. I always thought it was a real weird one to be included, considering sort of... the omissions, like not that there are things that aren't on there, but you know, when you're making a multi-effects, you're trying to make it pretty functional, so you include all the standards, all the things people would normally want. So I thought it was really strange that the Terra Echo found its way onto there.
Such a great, I think it's just such an underrated effect. More people need to experience the Terra Echo, I think.
Yeah. It is extremely cool. The Mini Space Echo is kind of a cool thing.
Oh,
but...
too. I mean, there's so much good new stuff that I'm sort of like, there's some cool old things, and if you're a collector, that's great. But there's so many good new pedals that you can go out and buy.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's look at pedals that I own that didn't make it onto my final board that are great Boss pedals are the Dimension Chorus, the Wazacraft Dimension Chorus. The VB2W, the vibrato, that didn't make it on. The DM2W, that in my opinion still the best delay in the world, that didn't make it onto the board. The bass driver, which is part of the X series,
mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't make it on. Those all of those pedals are pedals that I absolutely love. It's just, you know, space is at a premium.
Indeed.
When you...
Indeed. Well, but yeah, so, well, I guess we said we'd also talk about old electro-harmonics pedals. So we should probably move from Boss to electro-harmonics for a little bit.
We should, yeah. Yes, it's a good segue into talking about electro-harmonics because, yeah, that's right. I can't remember how much we covered on the podcast because we carried on talking about this after we'd stopped recording for a bit last week. But when I started looking around at TouchWires and things like that on Reverb and eBay, and I was thinking about vintage pedals. I just remembered this pedal that back when we worked at GAC, I used to love, and I used to get it out of the cabinet in the bass department and plug it in. And every time I plugged it in, I was like, this is absolutely how bass should sound. I loved it so much. And it was the Electro-Harmonix Blackfinger. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a Blackfinger. I think we did mention this on the Patreon last week. There was a Blackfinger that Electro-Harmonix made in the 70s, which was like an analog compressor. But when they reissued it, I don't know when the reissue started, but it was available when, you know, like a decade ago when we were all at GAC, They reissued it as a valve compressor. So the White Finger became the analog compressor and the Black Finger became the valve compressor. Mm. You weren't a big fan of it because I think it came in a wooden box with absolutely no packaging in there and it had a valve literally on the front of the board.
We opened a box and it was like smashed and just like, great. You know, just one of those things. I think... The one I always remember is the Tube Zipper, I'd say even to this day, still one of the pedals I could never get to sound good. I always hate saying things sound bad, but it was just, couldn't get it. I wanted a Tube Zipper because 1999, at some point, John Frusciante also had a Tube Zipper. And I was like, well, I need a Tube Zipper. Because, you know, I'm clearly, gotta have what he has. And I could just never, ever get it to sound any good. Right. Maybe I should go back to it, but now...
What was the Tube Zipper?
It's an overdrive. I've just looked at a picture. Tube Zipper, Tube Maze. excuse me. It was an overdrive with a envelope filter in it.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds very John Frusciante.
It was a cool little thing. I mean, we're talking about vintage pedals, but I'm looking through this list at the moment of just all electro-harmonix pedals for sale secondhand. I'm like, I remember, you know, just seeing a Hog here and a Pog, especially the first generation Pog. I'm like, remember when that came out? It's like, it was just such a game changer.
Yeah, nothing had ever been like that with all the faders. And
I just looked cool as well. It looked cool. I was just like, it was just, yeah.
If something like that came out today, it would be absolutely almost standard. You'd expect it now. But back then, this pedal with a bunch of faders on it that could make your guitar sound not like a guitar. Mm. That, it was...
I'm just looking through this list and I'm like, I've definitely owned some of these and now seriously regret ever selling them.
Have you ever owned an Electro-Harmonix talking pedal speech synthesizer?
Is that the...
It's a crate, like a wah pedal thing.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to do the idea of the talk box without the tube, right?
Right, yes, it doesn't have a tube. Mm. There's one on Reverb at the moment for £400 on the nose available in the UK.
I think, again, interestingly, you know, you can get those effects out of other things now.
Sure.
Not the one that I would pick, for sure. I don't think I've ever owned one. I've definitely heard the sounds of it, because they did another reissue, didn't they? They did the Talking Machine. Do you remember that? And I think that's probably still in the current line of Electro-Harmonix, Talking Machine. And all it did was the kind of A-E-A-O-U sort of vowel-y type sounds.
Oh, yes, I do remember that.
Which is like, yeah, again, like an envelope follow, like an auto wah, but just did those sounds.
Oh, there is an Electro-Harmonix Golden Throat.
Yes, that was the one I was thinking of. The Golden Throat is a talk box that ran in line with your guitar amplifier. So very much like the Iron Lung that they did later on, which was the vocoder, because obviously you had to run a talk box. You have to run a talk box in between your head and your cab. And it physically takes the load from your amp and blows it into a speaker that's got a tube on the end. You put that tube in your mouth, and then you might, and then, in fact, I can tell you this, the whole time I've worked in retail, I've never, ever demoed a proper talk box. I mean, obviously the reason that you wouldn't put something in your mouth and then you've got to be like, you're going to have to bite now, you've put it in your mouth. But also, yeah, because you had to use a PA, you know, a lot of people didn't get that. But Electro-Harmonix were the first one to do like the talk box in a pedal that just ran in line with your guitar amp. But yeah, the Golden Throat was very much the same thing, but from the 70s or the 80s.
I see.
And obviously, so much of the reissued stuff after Electro-Harmonix went kind of bust and then came back. And, you know, they started to reissue things in the kind of the 90s. I mean, the vintage Electro-Harmonix pedals I've had, like vintage, I had the Space Drum from 1977.
Oh, yeah, the old Space Drum. What did the Space Drum do?
It basically went, boom, every time.
Did you actually have to hit it? It was just it was a thing that you hit?
Yeah, you actually hit it. It was a percussion pedal, basically. So what's that song? You Can Ring My Bell by Anita Ward. That is the sound of the Space Drum. That is basically, yeah, the guitar sound, the percussion sound in that track.
I see.
So I had one of them and sold it stupidly. It was wicked. Boss actually did. This is a bit of a weird Boss pedal. Boss actually did a series of pedals called the DRP series. Derp. DRP 1, the Dr. Pad, the Dr. Pad series from Boss. These were the original, like, percussion pads
for
drummers and guitar players. And they did a bass drum one. They did, like, a kind of weird sound one. So, like, the DRP 3 had, like, glass cowbell scratch and gong. Then they had one that was just bass drum, and then they had one that was like more snare and synth stuff. Because I think, yeah, Boss also had the percussion synth, which again was the same thing. Hit it with your foot or your hand or whatever. But yeah, had a space drum. It was very cool, but it was very janky, I guess, is what I would say. It just broke all the time, and the pots were a bit rubbish.
Electro-Harmonix. You're getting the tones, not the build.
Yeah, exactly. I had a 70s Electric Mistress flanger.
Oh, yeah.
Which I bought.
I'm looking at one now. They go for £325.
Yeah, I had one, paid a lot less for it than that. But they run on Centerpin Positive. And
what?
Yeah, so I think they used the little pin. But the one I had been modded to take a barrel jack. And I plugged the wrong thing into it and blew it up.
Oh.
And then was like, didn't have anyone who could fix it. So I sold it for like nothing. And someone was like, thanks. You just needed to replace this part. Cheers. I was like, I have also had, have I had anything else? No. I mean, I've had a lot of the kind of like modern big box reissue pedals, the Holier Grail, the Holiest Grail. And right now I've got the Holy Grail. I've got one of the early V1 Holy Grails, which is really good. Double Muff, really good. Russian Big Muff.
Have you ever had the Deluxe Big Muff?
Yes, had a Deluxe Big Muff as well.
Well, what is the deal with the Deluxe Big Muff? Why has it got two extra controls on it?
It's got a compressor in it.
no.
Because what you need for a Big Muff is compression. so it's got their, whatever their, like, two-knob compressor is, that runs into a Big Muff. And it's in a massive, massive box.
It's a huge box.
The circuit board is...
For only two extra controls,
the circuit board is tiny. obviously, I've got my 74 op-amp Big Muff, which I absolutely love. But again, if you step on it, it might die. I've had quite a few.
What about the frequency analyzer? What is that? There are a few vintage ones. I'm looking at, I don't know, they haven't stated the year. Looks like they might be 70s.
I think
just the start of 80s. There are two, and they're like £170, £200. They're not a lot of money.
Ring modulator.
Oh, now we're talking.
ring modulator. I mean, if I was going to buy an Electro-Harmonix ring modulator now, I would buy the ring thing.
Right. Do you think that's better in the frequency analyzer?
Because the thing
right.
about the ring, so the thing about a ring modulator is that you kind of need to tune it to the key that you're playing in.
I see.
And the thing about buy using something like the ring thing is it's got like an intelligent ring modulator in it. I love ring mod. I think it's an awesome effect. And if it goes down slow enough to become a tremolo, you know, you can kind of go all the way from trem to kind of like, yeah, robotic, you know, sort of ring modulation, which is mm-hmm. really cool. But yeah, frequency analyzer. I mean, again, they just had so much kind of crazy stuff in the 80s. They were just churning stuff out.
Yeah.
I think...
What? Sorry, go
I
on.
Was going to say, if I had to buy any one Electro-Harmonix pedal now, I would buy the 16-second delay. That would be the one,
for me.
That thing, they are... Well, you basically never see an original one.
Right.
But the one from the early 2000s... it's basically one of the first loop pedals, I guess you would say. It's a looping digital recorder. So you have a record and a play button, and then you basically set how many bars you want it to be. And then you've got like a modulation inbuilt, and then you've got like feedback. You've got an inbuilt click, which is really weird, and then a dry out and affected out. But the great thing with that is that you could plug it into a foot switch related separately, that then had like forward, reverse, half speed, double speed. And it's used a lot by Niels Klein. He does a lot of, is it Niels Klein? I want to say that's the right person I'm thinking of. Yeah, Niels Klein. Kind of amazing kind of guitar player, plays in Wilco. Doing a bunch of other stuff as well. Played in Big Walnuts Yonder with Tara Mello,
Nick Reinhardt.
And yeah, awesome. But that thing is wicked. He puts it on like a laptop stand and then uses it for like looping in real time. Just kind of like a bit like a precursor to the kind of looping functions on the DL4.
Oh, I see. Okay, that's interesting. Well, we'll see. I don't know what I'd end up with. There is an old blue 70s Electro-Harmonix Memory Man going for 400 quid.
One of them.
You have one of those.
If you're going to buy a Memory Man, fork out and get the deluxe Memory Man, because that is the one.
There is one for $749.
Yeah, they'd like stupid money now. Like,
yeah,
silly money for and obviously as well, they're all like, I mean, I've had mine calibrated like 3 times.
Like, right.
But when they sound good, they sound really, really good. When they sound rubbish, they are rubbish.
I see.
Which is why, actually, again, you know, same as kind of what we've done. I mean, they're much more down the, I would say, reissue route. But the modern Mini Deluxe Big Muff, I mean, it sounds so good. You know, it sounds so good.
What about the Little Big Muff? Was that you know, that was a thing?
I think the Little Big Muff.
Single control?
Yeah, I think it was still... I think there were some trim pots inside, but very much like... I'll tell you what is good, actually, Joe. And if you could still buy the Naughties reissue ones relatively cheap when they come up, Microsynth.
Yeah. Yeah, I did have one for a long time, one of the reissues. That was on my pedal board for a long old time.
That's the first Electro-Harmonix pedal I've bought, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah, they're cool. They were very cool.
I tell you what is good, actually, and you can buy them for not crazy money, more of a modern thing. I think there is a vintage one, but you don't really see them. Double Muff.
Oh,
Double
yeah.
Muff is
yeah.
very cool. Because there's just two big muffs that like cascade into one another.
Well, I'm tempted by the Dr. Q as well. It looks like the Dr. Q goes for not a huge chunk of dosh as well. You can pick them up for, like, there's a 1977 Dr. Q on here for £99. which really isn't bad.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking through it again. So many. I think I had a small clone at one point. I mean, Amazing Chorus.
Yeah.
So many good little things out there.
So many good things. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm definitely not decided on that yet, but I'll keep you updated, dear listener. And if you've got any suggestions, because there are so many electroharmonics pedals, I'm interested in suggestions. I want something vintage and electroharmonics that's not ludicrously expensive, because I'm just taking a punt on it. So, dear listener, please let me know what you think. Now, last week, speaking of things that I've asked for your input on, dear listener, I was talking about getting a new acoustic because I was using these great Lewitt mics, getting a really lovely acoustic sound for this new project I'm working on with my partner, and I wasn't sure what to get, wasn't sure what good acoustic to get, and I asked for some suggestions, and of course, in fairness, dear listener, they were all very, very good suggestions. It's just, and to be honest, guys, you should all know by now, I have a very specific range of things that I will entertain. I'm not interested in modern things. I don't want stuff that's new. I only want stuff that's like glossy and in some way vintage or vintage inspired, which cancels out an awful lot of the things, you know. Especially Taylor, who I respect, make fantastic.
It's a different I respect change to last week, Joe. I think you're a little bit more dismissive early on.
I respect that they make great guitars. Obviously, a lot of people play them, and they're used on a lot of records, and they clearly sound good. I think they look awful, awful looking guitars. But a point. I can't remember if someone made it on the group. A very good point, considering my ideals when it comes to this thing. These sorts of things, is that Taylor are actually one of the only companies making very, very eco-friendly instruments and being very carbon neutral in their creations as well. So, you know, not great. But I have, not great for me when I couldn't possibly bring myself to get one. But I've boiled it down to two choices. It's come down to Eastman and Gibson. Funnily enough, of course it was going to end up being that, but, I'm interested in feedback again, dear listener, if you can help me out. So first of all, I was like, well, I don't want to spend too much money. I really want to keep it under $1,000 if I could. After looking around, I've just found out it's just not possible. I can't get the thing that I want for the price point I want. I've got to go over the £1,000 mark. Which always feels like you're being a bit more serious, but there's just nothing that's kind of vintage, cool, parlory, you know, maybe like not a Lightwood that's you know, available at that price point.
Mm.
So fine. I accepted that. That's okay. Eastman, they do the Eastman traditional, the E1000 SS00. They do it in Sunburst. It has a gorgeous sort of tiger scratch plate on it, a little 14th fret parlor. It's £1,200. I can get one for £1,200 off of Peach Guitars, and it is absolutely gorgeous. It absolutely looks the part in every way, shape and form. From videos I've watched, it looks like it sounds fantastic. The build quality we know coming out of Eastman is fantastic. It's more money than I want to spend, but I know it's you know, it's money well spent. So there was that. But then I realised, well, if you're spending £1,200...
it's the classic excuse.
I know. It's such a problem. If I spend £450 more, if I spend £1,649, then I can go to Guitar and I can get a Gibson L00 Studio. Of course, the actual thing that the Eastman is very, very much inspired by. Again, in a lovely walnut burst. A gorgeous walnut back and sides. Ooh, everything about the Gibson L00 is fantastic. It's basically, shall I get the guitar that I absolutely want for £1,649? That is a lot of money, though. That's so much more money than I want to spend. Or is the Eastman really good enough doing a very convincing copy of that at the £1,200 mark? I'm not sure. So where would you go?
I just on looks alone, considering they're both Sunburst parlors, I'd go with Eastman.
Really?
Yeah. I just think they'd both be great guitars. I think you should probably play them and see.
Yes, yes.
Which we talked about last time. And they're very much doing the same thing. But, you know, I think from a budget perspective, and you know it's going to be good, I think the Eastman. I think as well, the great thing, if you wanted to, obviously, Peach offer a Plex setup with any guitar if you want. It's an extra cost, but you can get it kind of super set up if you really wanted it to.
No, oh, that's quite a nice thing.
But yeah, for me, I think I'd go for the Eastman.
Yeah. Eastman. I guess the thing is a Gibson acoustic at 1600 quid is Gibson operating at their bottom end, at their lower end. And at 1200 quid, it's Eastman operating at their more premium end. So I feel like I'm almost...
It's difficult, though, isn't it? You can't, you know, Gibson at their cheapest. It's like...
Yeah, sometimes they cut corners. But they cut corners on their cheapest stuff sometimes. That's my worry about Gibson. But the Eastman, I know, is going to be a lot of attention to detail.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, when we boil it down to brass tacks, I'm talking about the name on the headstock, aren't I?
Basically,
that's what I'm doing.
What you're doing.
That's what
basically,
doing.
You want the Gibson because it says Gibson. It's for the longest time, again, just to bring it to, you know, bring it back around to what we were talking about earlier. So many people for the longest time just didn't want Boss because it said Boss on it. You know, right. And it's, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people go, oh, I can't play that because I've already got a Boss pedal, or, you know, it's got Boss on it, yeah. Or, you know, whatever. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, oh, could I play an Eastman when I could get a Gibson? And it's like, oh, they're both great guitars.
Oh, yeah. It's not that I'm not like, I wouldn't be ashamed to have Eastman on the headstock. It's that Gibson, for me, still, they're for a large part of my heart. Like, they are still, for me, the aspirational brand.
Yeah.
You know, and so the to be able to spend 450 quid more and get something where I could be like, yeah, I've got a Gibson, you know, that's there, but 450 quid more is still a big old chunk. You know, it's still, you know, a quarter, almost a third almost of the price of the entire instrument, you know. Yeah. It's a chunk. I don't know, tell me what you think, dear listener. Yeah, so it's the choices, if you want to check them out. I'll probably post them in the group. It's the Eastman Traditional E1000SS00, and it is the Gibson L00 Studio in Walnut Burst. That's what I've boiled it down to. I think they're both great. I don't know where to go. We'll see.
Let's make a few trips, Joe. Let's go and try a few bits. Maybe that's the thing to do.
Yeah, you're probably right. We'll see. Okay, well, we're coming up to the end of this podcast, so we're gonna, you know, after that we're gonna go off over into the Patreon. I want to probably talk about this Ashdown amp there, I think, so I want to talk all about the cool things that I got to design or got to have a hand in. Mm-hmm. On there, we said we're going to talk about, over on the Patreon, we're going to talk about what Fenders we've not owned but wish we have. Mm-hmm. So Fenders that are maybe passed us by, but are things we should look into a little bit more. So what should we talk about for this last bit?
Why don't we talk about the biggest collab to hit guitars to hit the world since Marmite met peanut butter? We're talking about Primark and Greggs. No, also news today, but no, the news that Fender have teamed up with Illumination, the film studio, to make some one-of-a-kind custom shop Minions Fenders. I'm sure there's a lot of Fender hardcore, you know, Fender traditionalists going, oh, this is crazy. It is for charity, so come on.
It's all going to, yeah, sort of all proceeds from this very limited run of Master Build and very gorgeous, like, fun extreme guitars.
Yeah,
all
very,
of the money's going to
very fun, very very extreme. But you know what, if it raises a lot of money and makes more people play music, exactly, then I think that's a good thing. But interestingly,
it's going to all the money's going to the Fender Play Foundation. So rest assured that, you know, every penny raised is going to the bonuses for Fender At the end of the year.
Yes, indeed.
it's a wonderful. The Fender Play Foundation is great. It's an organisation that's aim is to equip, educate, and inspire the next generation of players, and that is a very cool thing.
Yeah. So it's in part with the. It's in part, yeah, for Minions: The Rise of Gru. I think Minions is now. I read something the other day that the Minions movie franchise is now like one of the biggest franchises in like animated film history.
Wow.
I
bet Pixar are well annoyed.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Pixar have got the stories, and what you really needed was some characters that just look like little yellow beans. Who needs depth and character when you've got Minions? Interestingly, I think the first Minions film has done some work. Yeah, Minions, the film, Minions, 2015, budget of $74 million, raked in $1.159 billion at the box office.
Good Lord.
Absolutely mental. I think it's good. And that just means that there's just a lot, you know, out there. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of people out there who want to support, do this kind of thing. And let's talk about the guitars, because the guitars are... So they're basically made by Kyle McMillan. He's made a Minions Strat. It's kind of like a red Strat with like Minions inlaid logo.
It's Dakota red. It's the Stratus Stewart, so based on the Minion character Stewart. So it's covered in lots of like a Dakota red Strat, but it's kind of punky. Yeah. It's the punky Minion one.
I'm going to put it out there. I like the Minions movies. I think they're absolutely fantastic. Who doesn't love Steve Carell playing, you know, Gru, the evil villain, and the Minions are just funny. Yeah, good watch. The three main Minions. So you've got the Strato Stewart. So like you say, the punky Dakota red kind of Strat.
Matching
headstock. And yeah, Minions inlays at a cool $48,000.
I mean, look at the flame on the neck on the back of this.
Absolutely bonkers. These are like the creme de la creme of like Fender builds. It also just happens that they've got amazing Minions artwork and design. You've then got Otto's Moonbase, which is a P bass.
It's like a 51-ish P bass, so it's a slab body P bass, but with a split P bass pickup in
no
the middle.
No volume, no tone. It literally looks just like...
Oh, I didn't realise that. There are no controls.
There's no controls, and then the upper bout. has got acrylic, and it's got a Minion in it, which is absolutely brilliant. So the Otto Moonbase is $50,000, built by master builder Ron Thorne. It's a 7-piece snap together older body that can be taken apart and reassembled. absolutely brilliant. So it looks like they were designed by people that work for the... Luminosity is credited to designers to say I was blown away by their initial concept as an understatement. Yes, I think there was the film studio involved in that. There then is the Cosmic Kevin. I think the new Minions film, Rise of Gru, is set in the 70s. Thundercat has done an amazing single for it, actually. Very, very much of that kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a acoustic, which is really interesting, obviously, for...
A Fender Dreadnought.
Yeah, Fender Dreadnought acoustic in the master built by Gonzalo Madrigal. I think that's probably how you say that. So it's got a carved headstock, the top is kind of like a burnt wood sort of Minions theme, and it's got like some 70s like block graphics on the back, which is kind of cool. It just looks like a really awesome... It looks a bit like the Crash, Fender Crash Eric Clapton guitars they did with matching.
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
We had one in GAC once. I think it was like £20,000 or something. And it says Minions in a kind of like wavy 70s vibe all the way down the fretboard. and then a carved Minion Impa logo.
Wow.
And then finally, and actually, I think personally, my favorite is the King Bob, which is the ukulele built by Dennis Galushka.
It's the most elaborate and it's the most ridiculous. Even the case, dear listener, is ridiculous.
It's like a plush red velvet. So this ukulele, the sound, so you've got King Bob, Bob Minion, with his crown, and the holes of the crown are the whole sound holes of the ukulele, custom painted by a freelance artist. I'm just trying to have a look at some of her work. I think she's just done a bunch of custom paint.
Sarah Galenberger.
I think she's just done a bunch of custom paint stuff for for Fender Four. I just realised the acoustic has Kev in massive letters in like 70s multicoloured vibe. And you've got the King Bob. The ukulele though is an eye-watering $50,000. which I get the other expensive, certainly the bass, the guitars, the acoustic, the ukulele. But then again, I'm like, it's not being priced for the money that the work has gone into it, is it? It's being priced as like super high-end collector's pieces for people who buy the most.
The acoustic is the most expensive. It's 71.
I honestly think it's more of a, I mean, there's obviously marketing things in this, but I think it's more just like, look, there'll be someone out there that's going to buy a one-off Fender. And you know, why not? If you're a multi-billionaire and your kids love Minions, or you love Minions, then this is the thing for you. I've also just gone on the website, Joe, and it's asked me, would you like to buy now 10% off your first order? I'm like, oh, $7,000 off the first one. I'm like, maybe. In fact, you can't actually buy on the website. You have to contact Fender directly to buy.
That's a shame.
The Cosmic Otto's Moonbase also comes in the best hard case I've ever seen. It's a molded hard case that is basically space themed, so it's just got like pictures of the galaxy in it. I think these are great. I think it's great they're doing it for charity. The King Bob ukulele, if I had a lot of money, I would buy a £50,000 ukulele for music charity, but I'd have to have a lot of money. But there we go. The Minions. Hey, do you know what? It's funny. We haven't talked about Fender custom shops for so long. We always used to talk about Fenders and what custom shop would you buy and what custom shop would you spec. And I was just thinking about it the other day and just seeing some on the website there. And I was like, we haven't talked about custom shops for ages. And I think it's just because we're not in a store and talking about the cool ones that are coming in and things like that.
I also think it's because a lot of the things that we wanted from a custom shop became available in FSR. True. And Fender just broadening out their range. Half the time, Matt, when we talked about custom shops from Fender, all we really wanted was a few more colour options. And they've really opened, you know, what they do there. It's so, the standard line is just so good now.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So there we go. But goes to show the power of big movie franchises and teaming up with huge instrument manufacturers. Yeah. Anything can happen.
Fender. Exactly. Fender going from strength to strength as being, you know, the biggest, most important guitar company in the
world.
Absolutely. Very good. Well, that is all the time we've got on this week's episode. You can, of course, dear listener, join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 gets you access to our Patreon special episodes, which we're going to go record now, and the entire back catalogue of those. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I sing you my thanks at the end of every week. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook and get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
was the tyrant Jew.
Yeah.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.